Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to In. Welcome. The applause threw me off. Welcome to In Our Craft or Sullen Art. I am your host, Richard Weissman. And we are on Late Night Poets, which is the largest group on allpoetry.com, which is the largest poetry site on this here planet we got going. And as opposed to our normal intro, I couldn't find one that was short. So I am turning it over to my co-host, Laurent. I'm bringing him on right now. And Laurent, whenever you are ready, we are ready for your intro.
Okie dokie. I am scrambling to get there in time, and I did. How about that?
Awesome.
No problem. All right, where is it? Here we go. There's no link on this. Damn it. All right. Gormenghast as a structure is really a character in Mervyn Peake's writings. And because it is a major character, despite being a building, I selected a couple of pieces that does a very good job of giving the reader, the prospective reader, some sense of Gormenghast. The castle was as silent as some poleaxed monster, inert, breathless, spread-eagled. It was a night that seemed approved by the consolidation of its darkness and its silence, the hopelessness of any further dawn. There was no such thing as dawn. It was an invention of the knights or the old wives of the night, a fable immemorially old, recounted century after century in the eternal darkness, retold and retold to the gnomic children in the tunnels in the caves of Gormenghast, a tale of another world where such things happen, where stones and bricks and ivy stems and iron could be seen as well as touched and smelt, could be lit and colored, and where at certain times a radiance shone like honey from the east, and the blackness was scaled away, and this thing they called dawn arose above the as though the fable had materialized, the legend come to life. It was a night with a bull's mouth, but the mouth was bound and gagged. It was a night with enormous eyes, but they were hooded. Gormenghast, that is, the main massing of the original stone, taken by itself, would have displayed a certain ponderous architectural quality were it possible to have ignored the circumfusion of those mean dwellings that swarmed like an epidemic around its outer walls. They sprawled over the sloping arch, each one halfway over its neighbor, until, held back by the castle ramparts, the innermost of these hovels laid hold on the great walls, clamping themselves thereto like limpets to a rock. These dwellings, by ancient law, were granted this chill intimacy with the stronghold that loomed above them. Over their irregular roofs would fall throughout the seasons the shadows of time-eaten buttresses, of broken and lofty turrets, and most enormous of all, the shadow of the Tower of Flints. This tower, patched unevenly with black ivy, arose like a mutilated finger from among the fists of knuckled masonry and pointed blasphemously at heaven. At night, the owls made of it an echoing throat. By day, it stood voiceless and cast its long shadow. End quotes.
What an amazing read and a wonderful way to start off our evening of celebrating Mervyn Peake's work. And I believe that we've got our host, big host of all the late night poetry shows. It says Old Philly. I'm guessing that this is Still My Eyes.
Unmute already.
I could be wrong.
Is she un-
Okay. So 215. Hold on. Try and bring her on.
Are you on
with us? I hear her.
I am on with us. I am.
Great.
And how are you doing?
Well, thanks. Good. I know we've spoken off the air, but it's nice to hear your voice on the air. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Hello.
Yeah, so
hello, Jean. Pleasure to have you, dear. What a nice surprise.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And what an amazing show. So, Laurent, I have to tip my hat. You know, I consider myself fairly well-read, but I had never heard of the author nor his works or any of this. So it was like finding this unoccupied, you know, room within a house that I was pretty familiar with. So I wanted to... Yeah, and what a room. He's a trippy author. He's very kind of, he has that kind of like gothic feel to him, and there's this whole like medieval nodding of the head, you know, the castles and simultaneously he's very knowledgeable about the canon, obviously, and and into fantasy, right?
It is not in the way that you would imagine a normal fantasy would be written, but it is firmly rooted in speculative fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's the master of the lyrical descriptive phrase.
Yeah, I got that. And then the other thing about him is that he uses the genres, I'm going to call them genres, in order to tell us some very deep metaphysical revelations that he's come to about, you know, what's going on here on planet Earth. So I was really impressed. Great choice. And I liked your chosen intro much better than anything that, you know, I was really struggling with YouTube. There was some really good stuff, but most of it was like 45 minutes long. Not appropriate for the show. So I want to kind of turn it to you and get your feel on, first of all, why you picked him, and second of all, your chosen reading to open the show.
Well, the reading was chosen to kind of explain what Gormenghast was. You know, it's a castle, but it is a castle of such immense size that inhabitants of the castle sometimes don't see each other maybe once or twice a year. Sometimes no one has seen an inhabitant and finds out they're still surprised the individual is alive. Each character has a place within the traditions of Gormenghast. They hold some kind of an official position. They are the strangest, oddest characters you will ever meet in your life. Like I said before, he has a lyrical descriptiveness in his writing that is breathtaking. There was a small phrase that I introduced into the contest itself. I actually gave, I don't see it now. I gave a little introduction to what's going on. Maybe it's in the, yeah, here it is. This is an author named J.G. Kelly, right? He said, I know of no author in all of the English language who is like Peak or who could aspire to be like him. His voice is as unique as that of Milton, Bierce, Conrad, Blake, Dunn, or Eliot, and as fully realized. I am a hard and critical man, cynical, not easily moved. There are passages in the Gormenghast series which so shocked me by the force of their beauty that I snapped the book shut overwhelmed with wonderment and take a moment to catch my breath. And I will tell you right now, I had the same reaction when I first read it. I would just stop and take a deep breath and drink in what I just read and then go back and reread it again and just look at it and go, how could anybody write something so beautiful? Just a stunning work. It gripped me, and the same thing happened in Lord of the Rings. You know, I would go to school, read the book between classes at lunchtime, on the way home, when I got home, before I went to bed, when I woke up, and you just envelop yourself. Aren't you sorry you asked me?
No, that's great. So I, too, was really impressed by this author. And there was this one passage, and I actually wrote to it, where it's talking about the nature of the place and specifically how it is a reflection of the human mind. And that made me so it's prompt five. The walls of Gormenghast were like the walls of paradise or like the walls of an inferno. The colors were devilish or angelic according to the color of the mind that watched them. And that to me, and I could be wrong because I haven't read this book yet, but to me, it seemed like Gormenghast itself was a metaphor for the mind and the nature of the mind, right? Huge, vast, you can get lost in it, little different compartments that don't see each other for years. So I was interested to see, do you think that was a stretch, or do you think that I might be onto something with that?
It's bigger than a mind. It's the world.
Okay.
It is quite literally the world and the people who live there. Because as I said before, in the initial dwellings, there were certain people who, wait a second, where is it? Is it? I don't want to invent something that is, it was in a, oh no. Look, the castle is so large, it spans so much that you think you'll never get to the end of it when you read it. And you know what? It is a long work, but it is one of those works that I think you need to make time for, because a thing of that literary beauty that exists and you do not participate in consuming it is a shame. It is an absolute crying shame.
Nice. Okay, so before we end our intro, I did want to ask Fill My Eyes if you had a thought or two about the intro that Laurent read.
I just think he's I have to go to the room.
Dean, you're not coming through very clearly. Mm-hmm. You need to get a lot closer to your phone, I think.
Anything else, you won't be able to hear me at all.
I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Well, you know, I don't have a whole lot to say, but in reading this and what you shared with me the other day, you know, it's a full-bodied and detailed right. You know, that's the way he is. You know, he has a wonderful eye for detail, and of course, the imagery always goes with detail in my mind. And I think that kind of awesome. You know, I love when you hear different authors that write like that, because you know, I have that wonderful thing too. I'm with you on the Lord of the Rings and all that, and one of my favorite authors is never going to hit this show, but he's very detailed as well, and I kind of like that way of writing. Because I think it kind of just keeps painting a picture all the way through. So it's pretty awesome.
Well, in the same way that Lord of the Rings fired the imagination, this fires the imagination in the same way. It's been compared many times to Lord of the Rings. I've heard many people say there are two great fantasy trilogies, Lord of the Rings and Gormenghast.
How about that?
Yep. I can see that. Okay, so I know we do have a full evening of poetry. So with that, I am turning it over to you, Laurent, for our first poem.
right. I take it Eric Svensson's is not the SoundCloud.
No SoundCloud this week.
Okay, then let me get his up there. And you are going to do the read, my friend.
Okay, I will try and do justice for our friend Eric. Okay, so this is called Mindbender by Eric Svensson. Mindful meniscus bulges. Creative tension builds. Quicksilver ideas simmer. Rendezvous with blank canvas lover. Wood-framed portal awaits quietly. Bristled paintbrushes, dreams of fervent touch. Pigment penetration. Veneration of linseed oil. Bride in white abides. Soon the bridegroom comes. Vacant virginity gives way. Caves in as the artists take possession. Mind meniscus rises and falls. Concave, convex, seesaw of creativity. Nude study takes on a life of its own. Energy exchange between creator and created. Lessor and lessee, pivotal purple pigments permeate. Change of atmosphere in the studio. Painter stands back abashed. Supine suspension of turpentine, pungent yet powerfully intoxicating. Willful like the nude study he's birthing. Slanted oriental eyes quietly cajole. The seductress on the canvas takes on a life of her own, provokes like well-chosen words tend to taunt, haunt, timid, fearful minds, mindbender alchemy of paint and canvas, from corporal constructs to surreal sentience, deconstruction into abstraction, cubistic approach. But the oriental eyes remain adamant, follow winged Hermes or sandals as he walks away, and a poem.
Nice read, Richard. Well done.
Thanks. I can't do it like Eric does, but I can certainly give it a poetic college try. And Jean, we can start off comments with you. What do you think?
Well, you know, as always, Eric always has his wonderful use of alliteration throughout. And a lot of times he has all these different elements he pulls in, but with this one, I see where he kind of mimicked the author a little bit. He picked something as a topic to painting, and he stayed with it, and he gave all the details he could about it. So it gives you the life of this painting from beginning to end, you know, right up to the painter walking away. And I think that's kind of what makes it similar, is the fact that it is detailed and it is well described. And, you know, I think he kind of met it there, you know, met the prompt. So, and I don't even know what the prompt was. Isn't it awful? But I think the style of writing is what it is, you know. Here it is, the love of the painter standing alone and staring at the big colored surface he is making. As they want to, it's best like reading another poem. But, you know, he did. I think he did. He met that prompt, and I think he carried it through very well. So nice job, Eric. Thanks for the share.
Excellent comments. Oh, and Laurent, your thoughts on Eric's piece?
Well, I thought he grasped the essence of love of the painter so well. The original prompt had to do with an individual's love of his world. In other words, an artist, a sculptor, a car mechanic, for that matter. I mean, whatever your world is, you love it. And I thought his words painted a beautiful picture, that union between imaginary subject and artist, accented and mind-bent perhaps by the paint and the fumes. It moves from corporeal constructs to surreal sentience, as he says. And the phrases bride in white and eyes cajole. Oh my, I mean, I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a delicious take and twist on the prompt.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too thought it was a nice way to open our show, because I felt like he really grasped the kind of color and tonality of Peake's writing, and especially of that prompt. And it's funny because normally we're not reading his work because he has the SoundCloud, but the ability to read the work live on the air when I'm really trying to make it sound good made the wordplay and the alliterations really come to life for me. And I thought they were very well suited into this glimpse into the mind of the modernist painter. Great work. And with that, we are ready for our next one.
Well, I think we're going to move into the Conrad carryovers.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
It does.
Let me just sign my... I'm having issues to have with this computer. What the hell is going on? All right. Let's see if I can get this right. Here we go. And Jean, if you could give this a read, I'd appreciate it.
Sure.
By Ken Smith.
Okay. We live in the flicker, by Ken Smith, of a spark from gleaming orange rings of stove on Loki, a speck of a spark that can catch in the murmur of a heart that lost its rhythm. Ignites lighting the chamber one last time, goes out, while the orange rings on a stove still glow. And
excellent read there, Jean. And that was inspired by Prompt 7, which, and this is also from Conrad's Heart of Darkness, we live in the flicker. May it last as long as the old earth keeps rolling. But darkness was here yesterday. Yeah, I really liked this extended metaphor. And he does so much with this brevity. It has this continuity throughout, which is something that you can only sustain in a brevity. And that that use of metaphor works so well. And I know on the radio you can't necessarily see the image, but those red coils of the orange coils of the stove on a low heat bring the whole thing to life. And I just thought it was a very intelligent word painting. Very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the orange rings and on low heat. You know, he didn't say high heat. It's low heat because I think we live at a low heat. And sometimes all we need is that little spark. And I like the use of the orange rings as a metaphor for that little spark, that speck of a spark that can catch in the murmur of a heart that lost its rhythm. The heart that lost its rhythm is a very nice thought. It's a very nice phrase because that rhythm can be regained and it can ignite, as he says, lighting the chambers one last time while the orange rings on the stove still glow. It kind of speaks to that moment, that flicker, which we live in. That sometimes is that spark that brings us where we want to go, to how we want to live. I really enjoyed the metaphorical aspects of this brevity. I thought it was well done.
Excellent comment. And Jean, I'll give you final word as our reader. What'd you think?
You know, I thought there was great imagery here and such a well-done brevity. And I think it was nice metaphors used throughout. So, you know, it's a brevity, right? It's wonderful. Very well done. I think you got his point across very well.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, Laurent.
All right, the next piece is by Kelsey D. It's called The Way of Things. I think it's my turn to read. The Way of Things. When the full moon speaks, the living things listen. Deep in the dark, bones spark as resting bodies rise to release the shadow's clutched scent. Here again, the cycle of obedience, where night limbs the night, where night limbs the light, where hearts of fog arm the rank smells and borrowed sight, Don't we all have a place that hungers to be known? We all seek to fill the empty belly's hole, the bellow of moon, the commandment for all. How vain to think, oh, never, not me, no. We all belong to the family of frightened things. Even I, when time arrives from my throat to thunder, will answer to that familiar call of the wild. End poem.
Excellent read. Yeah, you know, this one just really hit me the right way, and I thought it was inspiring, full of yearning and emotion. And I love that close. When time comes for my own throat's thunder, will answer to the ancient call of the wild. And we did medal this piece, and I was happy to see that it was a front page pick. So it's nice to know that all poetry agrees with our choices. The contests are always so tough because the quality of the poetry is so good. And Jean, your thoughts?
I knew you were coming here. I thought the piece was really well done. I like the I like the thoughts throughout. I kind of went here. How vain to think, oh, never, not me, no. We all belong to the family of frightened things, even I. When time arrives from my throat, the thunder will answer to that familiar call of the wild. It kind of wrapped you around the full thoughts of the piece right there. You know, we all think we're invincible, you know, and not invincible, but it's not going to happen to us. There's no way. But when that time comes and you have to respond and you have to really meet that call, you know, that's really what it comes down to. I mean, we do. So, yeah, it was nicely done. Nicely done, nicely written. There's a lot to it, but I kind of just honed it on the list. So, you know, what, three couplets on the list line. So, nice work. Really nice. I think, you know, to me, when you pull it all together, I think you did a nice job with the Joseph Conrad works that I saw. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, so we do have some callers. First, I think we have Pam. Let me bring her on the air. Is that Pam?
Hey, Richard. It is. Hey, Richard.
Hey,
Lauren.
Pam.
Hey, Jean. Good to hear you all.
Hey, Pam. Good to have you.
Absolutely.
Great having you on the air. Now, we do have someone else, so let me bring them on the air.
Yes.
This is Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey. Glad to be here, Richard. Good to hear from you, Lauren.
Hey, Dex.
Pam.
Welcome. Well, this is, see, Lauren, your choice of authors has brought the troops in. So a testament to what a great writer the guy is. Okay, so I'm going to give you final word on this poem, Laurent, and then we'll move on to our next one.
All right, let me go back to it. A number of things struck me in this poem, not the least of which is the phrasing. There were some lines that I simply have to repeat. Deep in the dark, bones spark as resting bodies rise to release the shadows crushed scent. I read that, and you got a smile and admiration. Where hearts of fog arm the rank smells and borrowed sight. I could repeat the whole damn poem. Don't we all have a place that hungers to be known? We all seek to fill. And then lastly, we all belong to the family of frightened things. I thought that line spoke deeply to a lot of things that Conrad has said. And I absolutely admire the last few lines which you chose, I think in your comment on this, and I have to absolutely agree with you. And that phrase, "my throat to thunder," beautifully done, as was the poem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it's not so easy to get medaled in these contests, and that was just a quality piece. Okay, Where would you like to go next?
Well, I think we're going to have Pam read this next one by Blue Right 76, and it is up.
All right.
Pam, if
absolutely, I'd be happy to. Only a Little Better by Blue Right 76. Poor old Maggie, much like you or me, friend, with her cup of tea, pills, and steam to keep pain at bay and some loneliness, few heartaches too, woke up to stiff bones, the migraine unyielding, stood at the window for some air and view action on the street, looking for the smiling kid to wave and spread peace. She finds a bread from her modest larder for the orphan kid, but the bills and taxes taxed her mind too, yet not like those aches. Then she found her books, some thrills and frills, somewhere before noon history caught her palm, some titters and jitters, pages of bloodshed, grateful for today, she prayed. Then came the daily news on telemode of bigots and burglars, wars and perverts. Maggie looked on, caught right and left, outraged or bound by a just cause. Somewhere between those pains and aches were caught like Gandhi's peace, suffocated and stamped on, forgotten for the day, like her disagreeable neighbor until the curtains fall on popping eyes and tinkling keyboards, all proclaiming peace that burns anew in the modern world, where sapiens rule only a little better than centuries past, only a little better. End poem.
Nice read, Pam. Okay, if we can start comments off with Dex, what'd you think?
Yeah, this was a great write, about a modern thing. You know, I took this as about almost as like a mother, pills and steam, you know, action on the street. It's almost the entire, when it gets to the point where it talks about, dealing with like the news, where is it? Then came the daily news. It really kind of hit me like the bombardment that we all take on a daily basis of just going through, even if you're just going through the normal everyday rigmarole, it's such a bombardment. For the orphan kids, that's a line that threw me off. But to me, it just talks about the modern era of slamming you down, and I thought that this was very well done.
Absolutely, great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'm intrigued by those lines. Then she found her book, Some Thrills and Thrills, somewhere before noon. History caught her palm. Some titters and jitters, pages of bloodshed. Grateful for today, she prayed. Then came the daily news of bigots and burglars, wars and perverts. At one hand, that line, history caught her palm. She's sitting reading about the past. Pages of bloodshed, the wars, all the bad things that happened. And she was grateful that she didn't live in those times. And then along came the daily news, and lo and behold, there's plenty to bemoan oneself about the burglars and the bigots, the wars and the perverts. It's kind of all just the same. So when she ends it with, "A beautiful peace that burns anew in the modern world, where sapiens rule only a little bit better than centuries past, only a little bit better." In other words, what have we learned? We haven't learned much. You know, we're a little bit better than we were in the past, but that's not nearly good enough. So when one looks at the prompt, after all, I also was a part of the great cause of these high and just proceedings. It really is an invitation to participate in those high and just proceedings which we seek and hopefully create a better world. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Great comment. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final word on this one.
Yeah, this is absolutely brilliant. You know, I just love how she brings us into this character right away with the line, poor old Maggie, much like you or me, friend, with her cup of tea, pills, and steam to keep pain at bay. And we think of this fragile old woman, and we think nothing of her other than that, like most of us who are aging, she has aches and pains and enjoys a hot cup of tea. And then we see as she's looking out on a window that she has this sense of kindness to her, this sense of understanding of the unfairness of the world. And as we read down and we see the looking back into the past, you know, of Gandhi's peace and a past of war and violence, that this is a woman who has been through a lot, who has seen a lot, and does, as Laurent was pointing out, truly have an understanding of how little the human nature has come to learn. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. Okay, Laurent, where would you like to go next? Are you on mute?
Yeah, I keep poking at the mute, and the damn thing just sat there and looked at me. Poked again, and I poked again. Finally, said, okay, you can talk. I put one up for Dex to read by Blue Raven. Dex?
Absolutely. Okay, so this is Blue Raven words. I lean back in the armchair of my mind, the observer, watching myself as I pick words to please others, leaving secrets unspoken until they heal or ignite. But really, there are no words, for what I choose to conceal glows, lost, has lost its substance, become like smoke, just a breath that brushes by, leaving the faint sentence of nostalgia. I hear the words I call myself, witness my own frustrations that sometimes keep me awake, listening to the night and spinning moonlight into wordless dreams. End poem.
Great read. What a beautiful piece there. I enjoyed this poem immensely. And I, too, could relate to that feeling that words fall short in the human experience, especially as it pertains to spiritual endeavors. And I loved where Blue Raven went with the prompt, especially that close that sometimes keep me awake, listening to the night, spinning moonlight into wordless dreams. Transcendence of words, just such a clever execution of that riffing off of the prompt. And the prompt, just so that everyone's on the same page, we were all imprisoned by the dictionary. We choose out of that vast paper-walled prison, our convicts, the little black printed words, when in truth we need fresh sounds to utter new enfranchised noises which would produce a new effect. Really excellent writing off of the prompt by Anne. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I agree with you entirely, by the way. I lean back in the armchair of my mind, the observer, watching myself as I pick words to please others, leaving secrets unspoken until they heal or ignite. I had a sense that, you know, writing for others, not for yourself, perhaps not what you need to do, but really there are no words for what I choose to conceal. The unspoken is not expressed, for having lost its substance, it its relevance cannot be defined by words, spinning moonlight into wordless dreams, but dreamt of. Powerful work in response to the prompt.
Absolutely. And Dexter, as our reader, I will give you final word.
Yeah, I feel like this is power of words, even when there are no words, for what I choose to conceal. You know, this is like the ultimate thing of language. This is what separates us apart from many different species or animals, is the ability to communicate. I hear the words I call myself. You know, even if you don't say it out loud, sometimes our inner monologue can be so striking and sometimes hold us down. And they can also keep us awake. She captures so much in this piece. It's just an incredible write, I thought, and brilliant take on the poem. So very well done.
Excellent comment. Okay, Laurent, where would you like to go next? Are you having trouble with the mute button again?
No, it's just my poor brain. I put one up by Neutron Bomb for you to read, Richard.
Okay, so this is by our friend, my former co-host for this show, Neutron Bomb, and it is called Safe Word. I hug a cactus closer still, watching the thorns press then pierce my skin. They break as I wriggle, splintering from lips to thighs, but the aura of pain purifies my resolve. It quietens the murmurs of the cloaked audience as they wrap me in bunting with bandages that constrict like a tourniquet. My safe word need not be uttered. I'm asleep in a chrysalis of haze, foggy from dehydration, purging my former predilections, an emesis bag clasped in one hand and a canoa in the other. The clock in my ward is motionless except for the second hand, which in a dithering death throw is stuck at 2:30 p.m. The aroma of roast beef hits my nose like a kick in the face, churning my stomach. The light through the adjacent building serves as a makeshift sundial, beckoning my internal feedback loops to reach parity. I'd rather claw my way out of a paper bag than a body bag with an identification tag wrapped around my big toe. I beckon silence instead of the incessant phone calls on speakerphone, and the clearing out of inflamed lungs rattles my brain. I know far too much about my neighbor who thrives on neg raving. The cooling of ice chips melt in my mouth, preventing an acute accurate temperature read, but that blood pressure machine has me guessing each time. Choose your own adventure, collapsed veins, tissued cannulus, and the lilac bruises that kiss my corporal form humble me. I am a cadaver clawing my way back across the river Styx, removed from the land of the dead as rhythmic grunts ring supreme. My hands scoop at the acrid water. The current state stasis is my bedfellow. With clear eyes and an open cavity, I will forge chainmail armor to safeguard my vulnerabilities, proceeding with a cautionary head. End of poem. And Laurent, if we could start with you, what'd you think?
Yeah, that was a damn good read, my friend. I like that a lot. This piece, when I did lose it, good Lord. Yeah, I'm sorry. This speaks, I think, a lot to the things that Neutron is going through right now in terms of her health and what she has to deal with. It's amazing the way we find ways to hurt ourselves. But she says, I hug a cactus. Closer, closer still, watching the thorns press and pierce my skin. I feel that her physical well-being threatened by the illness, but she strives. I'm a cadaver clawing my way back across the river Styx, removed from the land of the dead. She sees before her with clarity, and she girds herself for a cautious battle, yes, but cautious. But I think this is a battle she wins because she's protected by the armor she forges as a safeguard, a mental armor that safeguards vulnerabilities, as she puts it. I just thought this is a deeply felt account of her struggle, which had me rereading and appreciating this piece and her. It's kind of a sad but a triumphant work at the same time.
Absolutely. I think that's exactly what she was conveying. It's a confessional poem, absolutely. And Pam, your thoughts?
Oh, this is beautiful and brilliant. It's always wonderful to see a write by Neutron, how she takes it on such a personal, as you were saying, confessional style, and yet at the same time, it spans a greater scope that's relatable to pretty much, I think, all of us, even if you are not going through immediate health concerns. You know, we all face the knowledge that death will eventually catch up with us, that, you know, human life is a fragile and temporary thing in its physicality. And, you know, I really like how she opens up with the, I hug a cactus closer, closer still, watching the thorns press, then pierce my skin. And, I am asleep in a chrysalis of age, foggy from dehydration, purging my formal predilections on emesis bag claps in one hand and a cannula to another. I mean, just the raw honesty of what one has to go through in order to keep living and keep surviving, and knowing that in the end, eventually, everything just catches up with us. Powerful write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Pam. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a fantastic write by Neutron. But just the struggle of mental health and, you know, you get the feeling of this confinement, you know, the wrap me in the bunting bandages, you know, the tourniquet and the cloaked audience, you know, there seems like there's this watching audience that really doesn't have this connection to you, which is probably the case in those places. The churning of your stomach, you know, you're ordering roast beef. She really captures it all in this piece, and it's just crushing, and it's extremely sad. And I'm sure that there's portions of it where you'd wish that you'd be dead, but they won't allow it. When she talks about with an identification tag wrapped around my toe, I'd rather be my claw. This is to the point of a person that would rather check out, but they just won't allow this, you know. And so, talk about being at the very rock bottom. What an incredible right and safe word, you know. They don't respect the safe word, you know. That you could say whatever you'd like. They're going to treat you the way that they feel like you need to be treated, I think is what the whole point of the safe word is. Safe word is, you know, it doesn't matter to you. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too just love this piece. Neutron is struggling with health issues. My wife also is struggling with health issues. So it was very kind of poignant to be the reader of this, kind of bringing it to life for the radio. And she does offer us life without protective garments, struggling against Thanatos, against pain realms of contemporary hospital existence. I thought it was a harrowing portrait that is all too real as she forges chainmail armor to safeguard vulnerabilities, proceeding with a cautionary head. Just a very powerful piece. And with that, we are ready for our next one, Laurent.
All right. As the next reader, I'm going to read a piece by S. Sharp called Near Death. Near death, cascading shimmer of blood, sword driven into shade, cast ribs, echoes the light of distance. I'm unending, but bound in the bodice, restraining night and day, earth and passing. Arrogant skies reflect, like the suckling newborn's mouth of flame, bookend to smoke swirling, pledging spark to flame the conflagration, uncontained. Raging fire pumping through open veins, gouging the eyes, blinded in the moments. End poem.
Excellent read there, Laurent. Yeah, I thought this was unusual. Scott normally doesn't do brevities, but boy, when he does them, they are powerful, lyrical, dark. It read like an invocation of a near-death experience. I thought it was great. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this really is a brilliant and powerful write. And I like how he compares the near-death experience to the idea of a new birth, and how they are basically like twin flames, the bookends of each other, that in creating this sense of a new life of balance and a new understanding for how valuable life is. So wonderful write all the way through and very well done.
Excellent comment there, Pam. And Laurent, as reader, I'll give you final word on this one.
Yeah, near death, cascading shimmer of blood, sword driven into shape, cast ribs, echoes the light of distance, time unending but bound in the bodice restraining night and day. I get a sense of frozen time, hanging on to life somehow, but unable to clearly see the fire raging in the body and in the mind. I absolutely love the lyricism in this piece.
Excellent comment. We are ready for our next one.
All right, I'm going to put Pam's piece up. So Pam, if you would do so kindly a job of reading it for us, I'd appreciate that.
I would be happy to, although it would also be fine with the SoundCloud being played.
Sorry about that.
Pam, it is your choice. Would you prefer us to just play the SoundCloud? Is that okay?
Go ahead and play the SoundCloud.
Okay. Give your voice a rest. Here we go. If I can hit the right button. Okay, hold on. One more time. That worked.
That kind of day. The rising temperatures of the day wore humidity like a bathing suit, still dripping remnants of the sea. This was not an afternoon of lovers at a picnic, family outings, and joyful serenades of salvation. This was that moment of high noon where dreams dissolved like fish bones in acid, lungs struggled, couples unleashed petty arguments, serial killers hid in shadows, pondering salted sweat, populating with freshly drawn blood. Snipers long to soothe an itchy trigger finger. Adrenaline junkies finding the rush in skydiving and murder. They all seem to stand back, as if to give a wide berth of room to the Toms, Dicks, and Harrys, the middle management putzes, the office supply sellers, the 9-to-5 frauds of the daily grind. Flat Stanley's traveling the same 240 blocks over and over again, carrying the burdens of expectations and judgment, the oppressive swelter of the day sticking meat hooks in brain matter, revealing the underlying psychosis of a spit-shine dullard who was tired of winking off to novelty porn after once again being rejected by a wife who was getting porked by the local butcher. This was one of those raw and brutal afternoons where the average Joe stepped up to sink steel teeth into the prey. This was a turning point where the mundane flash mobbed into headlines, splattered with molten morbidity and sensationalism, eager to glorify the next break of the working schmuck who just wanted for once in his life for the damn barista to not ask what his usual was. Yes, no doubt. It was definitely that kind of day. End poem.
Woohoo! I love this piece. I thought you had great similes and metaphors throughout. It was a pained portrait of middle management putzes, the office supply sellers, the 9-to-5 frauds of the daily grind, flat Stanley's traveling the same 240 blocks over and over again, carrying the burdens of expectations and judgments. It was definitely a dark beauty of a ride, a confessional, societal kind of finger-pointing of that 9-to-5 grind that I believe so many of us can identify with, and just excellent storytelling, very highly identifiable throughout. Quite an achievement in Japan. Yep, absolutely. And Laurent, your thoughts?
You know, this may be off the wall, but in many ways, that kind of day and what happens when she writes, this was that moment of high noon where dreams dissolve like fish bones in acid, kind of reminded me of the movie Taxi Driver, where, you know, it was just a day, and then all of a sudden, everything happens that, you know, that happens. That was a neo-noir psychological thriller, you know, if you will, set in what was called the decaying and morally bankrupt New York City. And there was so much of this that kind of resembled that serial killer's hidden shadows under in salted sweat, copulating with freshly drawn blood, snipers long to soothe an itchy trigger finger, all the way down to the oppressive swelter of the day, sticking meat hooks in brain matter. Yeah, this is one of those raw and brutal afternoons where the average Joe stepped up to sink steel teeth into his prey. And I went, wow. And in my comment, I said that kind of day holds darkness at noon, a powder keg waiting to blow almost. I thought this was dark genius and very well done.
Thank you, Laurent. Great observation.
You're welcome.
Yeah, really.
Thank you.
Excellent insights. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that was great, Laurent, talking about Taxi Driver. I mean, that's like spot on, or else the one with Michael Douglas where he loses it. I can't remember what that one's called either, but at the moment. But, you know, really this entire piece, it really brings out the almost damned if you do, but damned if you don't. It's the ugly side of conformity. It's really the ugly side of conformity. Because even then, your wife is still cheating on you. You still did what you wanted to do. Or you still thought you did what you were supposed to do. But even then, you're cheated like shit. And I'm sorry for saying that online. But, like, you're still... And Pam captures that. It's a morbid thing. But it's like, it's almost like that's the problem, or that's what the lashing out is. You did what you were supposed to do. You conformed. And still, this is how it turned out for you. What a fantastic write, Pam, and just a great piece.
Thank you, Dexter. And you know what? I like those observations. I'm pretty sure that if I can say novelty porn and porked by the local butcher, that you can say shit. So.
I know. I'm sorry. Nice. Okay. And with that, we are ready for our next poem.
All right. Our next reader is Duke Dex, and I put up a poem by Bill Schiller.
Awesome. This is a conviction by diction. Shit, hold on. I accidentally clicked off it right as I was about to read it. All right. By crimes of language, we are mirrored by condemnation. Words of assail in lettered aim to define another peril. An unfettered provocation. Legendary sticks and stones with the broken bones left behind. Bones will heal, yet words scar for life. The shooting off of mouth. How it finds its mark and moth drawn to light. An utterance of wrath and collaborated by tone. Be mindful of what you utter and what you mutter. Least words be cluttered with contempt. The worst of hardened criminals speak without regret. A torturous tongue is like a blade fed by those with intent to harm. Are unstable, but understood. End poem.
Great read there, Dexter. Okay, Pam, if we can start comments with you, what'd you think?
Oh, this is amazing. I really like how Bill has such hard-hitting and brutal lines about the way that words can and do hurt, you know, the weapon of the tongue. And, you know, I think all of us have at one point or another, especially in childhood, heard that little chant, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And that is so not true. You know, it's words, I mean, they tear apart the spirit, they crush a person's hope, they can completely change the course of a person's life. And I really like this all the way through, but especially near the end as he says, an utterance and wrath is calibrated by tone, be mindful of what you mutter, lest words be cluttered with contempt, the worst of hardened criminals without regret. You know, wonderful lines and very well done.
Excellent comment there, Pam. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to go right where Pam went. Be mindful of what you mutter, lest words be cluttered with contempt. The worst of hardened criminals speak without regret. A tortuous tongue is like blade fed by blood. Those with intent to harm are unstable, but understood. It's strange that we look at a hardened criminal who is clearly understood because of his intent to harm and the tone. As you said earlier, Pam, an utterance in wrath is calibrated by tone. And, you know, so we have to be careful what we say because, you know, sometimes we don't say what we mean to say. And all of a sudden, there's contempt in our voice, you know, and what we say in our words. I thought that he took the original quote, "We are all imprisoned by the dictionary," and ran with it beautifully.
Excellent comment. Yeah, I too thought it was excellent riffing off of the prompt, the imprisoning by the dictionary, crimes of language, mired in condemnation. Just really well done throughout, very lyrical, and it rang, had the ring of truth throughout, very nicely crafted. And Dexterous Reader, I'll give you a final word.
Yeah, I thought this was a fantastic write, and I thought you guys all captured it, just talking about the importance of words. But, you know, those with the intent to harm are unstable but understood. I feel like it also ties into where we put our resources and where we put our time. It's often very much so studied, the people that really harm us. It's almost as if other people that are not harming us with our words and the people that are very more reserved are not understood. And so I just got a feeling of more so the opposite needs to happen, of so much more so time needs to be put in, and we need to put our more focus onto the people that are not harming us, you know, with this. So very well done.
Excellent comment.
Nice comment.
Okay, Laurent. Yep. You're up for our next piece. Go ahead.
Yeah, your poem is up, Richard.
Ah, okay, very good. So, yeah, and I went with that prompt five, the walls of Gormenghast were like the walls of paradise, or like the walls of an inferno. The colors were devilish or angelic according to the color of the mind that watched them. So the poem's called The Colors of the Mind. Red blood weeps from the old wooden cross at the place of the skulls, cleansing all with white wool of a butchered lamb. Flames of red curl north from rage's unquenchable molten core. The coiled rattler unfurls, now swallows its honeycomb tail in cyclone emptiness. Blue vastness stretching, arching, kissing fingertips of the horizon's edge, which masks a colorless black void beyond. Blue light illumines the dank cage, tinting off-kilter stainless steel bars and drab gray concrete walls. The retina constricts to an ever-narrowing pinhead while angels dance and ever-ascending thought balloons awaiting rainbow pinpricks from dark empty hollows below.
I always love to hear the poet read his own stuff, and Richard did that proud. Nice job. Pam, could you start us off, please?
Absolutely. I would be happy to. As always, a wonderful read, Richard. Oh, my goodness. All the way through, amazing imagery and metaphors. I like the spiritual, religious tone to the first lines with the idea of the cross on the hill of Golgotha and the sacrificial lamb, and then the imagery of the rattlesnake swallowing its own poison, and the blue vastness stretching, arching, kissing fingertips of the horizon edge, and it seems all almost surreal, almost beautiful. And then you bring us into the harsh reality of the what was once seen as something glorious and beautiful is now has become a prison in hollowness and emptiness. I really like, and drab gray concrete walls, the retina constricts to ever-narrowing pinhead while angels dance on ever-ascending thought balloons. The idea that our perspective changes our environment and vice versa, that all of a sudden we see things in a new way, and unfortunately those new ways aren't always ways that are better, but they're not necessarily better, but they're not beautiful. They're the reality of it. So amazing, right, and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
Thanks, Pam. Those are great insights. And Dexter, what do you have to add, my friend?
Yeah, great comment there, Pam. And what I loved about what Pam said was also some of the spiritual side to it. But I also feel like this is almost where the spiritual and some of also the scientific side add to it too. Because it seemed almost to me like a very scientific, almost right, because it feels like a lot of these colors and these things that are happening are just different heat waves and different things that are happening within our brain that are colors of the mind that are happening. So it seemed like this is almost like a very almost in-depth scientific way of routing this entire thing too. But it also then too seemed to me like almost like, and I hate to say this, but like almost like a mushroom trip or something like this, where at the end of it, you know, you feel like when you come back to Earth, you're in this prison that is Earth, but you almost seen on the other side of what could be, which was in your own mind the entire time. This is an entire fantastic, right, Richard, and I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Dex.
Thanks, Dex. Great comment, my friend. Richard, you've taken the prompt, and using colors, you've constructed a poem which is filled with sacrifice and anger within the walls, and it's leavened by a blue vastness, which I thought was well done, but only concealing that colorless black void beyond. And if angelic thoughts are offered, and I like the blue metaphor, they're too often brought to earth by the despair emanating from below, the colors of that despair. The prison analogy allows for a realistic expression of the hopelessness which runs through that last stanza. First of all, it's a beautiful take on the prompt, and use the colors which were a devilish or angelic very well in the body of the poem. The blue light, the blue vastus, the flames of red, and the red blood, the white wool of the butchered lamb. You express with those colors exactly what the colors of thought could be according to the color of the mind that watched them. I thought you did a very skillful job and would certainly like a couple of comments on your poem from you.
Well, I think actually that all three of you had tremendous insights into what I was trying to do because, like a lot of my poems, I like to use ambiguity in order to stimulate the reader to come to more than one conclusion. And as Dexter said, you know, it could be a very heady spiritual right, or it could be a very scientific right where you're looking at how the brain observes color and actually not much is going on. It's the brain that's making the colors inside of it. And that was the key to the whole thing, was that I wanted to make it as interpretable as the prompt itself. so that as you read it, you could come to more than one conclusion, just like the mind that's observing it. So that was the goal, and it seemed like it kind of came through. So good observations. That's why you guys are on the radio. Okay, and with that, we are ready for our next poem.
Sure. I see Jenny the Deep is in the room. Hi, Jenny. Nice comment. She loved it. It was a great poem. And we have one poem in front of Jenny the Deep. So, Jenny, hang on, and Pam is going to give your piece of read. I'm going to put my poem up, get it out of the way. This is called Futuo Id. I think I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's off the prompt. How merciful a thing is man's ignorance of his immediate future. What a ghastly, paralyzing thing it would have been if all those present could have known what was about to happen within a matter of seconds. For nothing short of pre-knowledge could have stopped the occurrence so suddenly it sprang upon them. And this is based on a true story, a real-life experiment by my father, trying to arouse interest in English to the students at a high school in the Bronx. The retelling is purely imaginative. And this is called Futuo Id, No Regrets. The audience sat with the stillness of ancient gravestones slumped and set in the earth. 100 pairs of youthful eyes fixed on him, neither animosity or welcome were reflected in the intenseness of stares so lacking in interest. Rather, the stricture of impending boredom had limited their postures to a single frozen position of animal comfort allowed by the old school's hard oak benches. A line of lofty windows mantled in dust and cobwebs permitted a pallid afternoon light to wash across the lecture hall. Children of the village's bright carvers sat in uneven rows to his left, the progeny of the castle's many inhabitants to his right. His lectern was mounted on a large dais so that he appeared to tower over the students before him, preacher delivering a homily on the fruits of learning, preparing to unleash the masters of poetry on a flock of silent ravens uncertainly balanced on a slack line. Dull genitors bred dull offspring. Imagination died at the hands of hidebound tradition. Not a spark among them, he surmised. Spreading his arms wide, he encompassed the room with his gaze, calling on a volunteer to read the first poem. Not a sound, not the slightest motion stirred in the herd of bland faces before him, as if a still life painting had substituted itself for the living panorama of disinterest before him. The little pricks, he thought to himself, stunted runts of twisted mental stock. They need awakening, a raw verb or two, an explicit noun. Lesson plan of the day discarded, he explained loudly, the hard K reverberating like hammered metal off the room's stone walls. The silence changed. The room immediately charged with energy, a ripple of interest spread through suddenly shifting postures, aware of the forbidden being voiced. Fuck, he repeated, more loudly this time, jerking the last head upwards from an ill-timed doze. To have sexual intercourse with, a word omitted by your English dictionary as taboo until just recently, making it difficult to trace in usage. The word apparently is used in a scandalous 15th century poem titled Flen Flis, Fleas, Flies, and Friars, written in corrupted Latin and Middle English. It reads in part, Non sunt in celi, quia fucante ec iuiusis of Heli. The monks are not in heaven because they fuck the wives of the town of Eli. The ravens commenced chattering loudly between themselves, repeating the forbidden word over and over, louder and louder, until the profanity became less a vulgarism and more a sound without meaning. Never had fuck rang out so loudly or so proudly, the intensity of the obscenity matching the peal of a large bell ringing out over the countryside. The students were liberated, freed from the constrictions of their conservative society, howling the word as they leapt upwards with each new shouting, at which point the hall's large wooden door burst open, led by the grizzled headmaster and, most significantly, by the master of arms clutching leg chains. Probably better not to have, he thought, but it was no premeditation to this moment. It had sprung on him in the instant, and if he had considered the consequences, the insane screeching of the headmaster in his ears grew into an odd kind of music. Echoes of the students' exclamations served as lyrics to the harsh melody of spume issuing from the florid and hateful face before him. Fuck it, he thought, and turning to his students yelled, fuck it also means not to care. Amazingly, in one voice, they shouted back, fuck it. He was able to smile as they forcefully ejected him from the melee of voices that continued the chant well past the time he found himself confined in a nearby unused office. Two of it, no regret, end poem.
I love this piece. So, I do not teach kids, but I am an educator, and even for adults, keeping your students, your audience, interested is a never-ending challenge. And I felt that you conveyed in a clever way the story of how it's done. And I totally identify with the high school teacher pulling out a poem containing the word in order to reclaim his audience. And very entertaining, and as usual, you are a master of storytelling, and it was joyful to read, and even more joyful to hear you recite it live on the radio. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Richard.
Absolutely. And Pam, your thoughts?
Oh, this is absolutely amazing. I really like the read of it. I think it takes great skill to be able to write a poem about a real event, because you want to use, you know, that those poetic freedoms that we have, those poetic liberties, and make it interesting to not only the reader but also to yourself, the writer. But at the same time, you want to stay true to the spirit of the event, the spirit of the message. And I think you do a wonderful job of that, Laurent. I had to put both yours and Richard's right on my amazing list, right? Amazing rights list, because they both warranted it. I like how this speaks on not only keeping the students interested, but helping people to realize that we limit ourselves when it comes to communication, when it comes to words used in literature, when we put words in certain boxes. Now, I wasn't 100% sure if ELY was going to be Eli or Ely, because I'm so used to hearing Ely, Minnesota. But that was really cool. Learned something new there. I really liked the students were liberated, freed from the constrictions of the conservative society. Oh, my gosh, did that just give me flashbacks to the Dead Poets Society, one of the most beautiful movies ever. Brilliant performance by Robin Williams. I mean, as you read those lines, I could see the students stepping up on their desks. an amazing write and very well done.
Thank you.
Great comment, Pam. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Well, as an elementary school teacher, this was my whole entire lesson plan going into the last 2 days of my summer. Our last summer course got over today. We watched movies the last 2 days, and I was completely on fuck it mode. You know what I mean? And so I loved this poem so much. And you know what's funny is that the last lesson that we worked on was about good and evil. And we went in and we talked about the way that the evil dresses. You know, we talked about Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker and black and white and dark and light and all of these things. And that was like, man, they were so engaged. And it's always the edgy stuff that the kids are engaged in. And so that's why I appreciated so much about this lesson. This is a high school lesson. And that's why I just appreciated so much about the engagement out of the students. And also just the willingness to try out of your father. So very well done and great, right, Laurent? This is one of my favorite writes by you, Laurent. I love this piece.
Thank
I don't
so
say
much.
That often about everybody. And you know what I mean? Like, I really love this rap.
Thank you.
Yep, great comment. Okay, Laurent, we are ready for our next one.
All right, let me see now. I think we're going to do Jenny. You grab her piece. Okay. And Pam, if you would give this a read, I would appreciate it.
Absolutely. Rebuilding Our Future by Jenny the Deep. Future falling apart, blinded by ignorance, fooled by corrupted blissfulness, refusing to learn our history's past, makes the entire world fail fast. Frozen in silent fears, kills all of our futures. Truth lies, pages of life turn into harsh chapters. Chaotic turbulence divides, shaking up innocent bystanders, lives, one united orbiting whole, falling flat like new earth. Trust no one, for truth lies. Frozen, trapped in your fears, volatile words appear, volation ceases to exist, withered hearts, tattered minds unite no more. When we can learn to understand and let love take our hand, then hate can be frozen. End poem.
Great read, Pam. So I love this form, the rictometer form, skillfully bent to your inspirational purposes. Very inspired poem. At places, it had a near slam poetry vibe when I read it, and it was quite satisfying throughout. Great job there, Jenny. Excellent. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I got from this piece a strong sense of warning, of an awareness that the world is fragile and so is truth, driven to falsehood by fear. And we can stamp out fear with love, for love is the anchor chain of survival for the species. And you know, we cast history aside. We just consider mass stories of the past. We ignore it at our peril. And this is outstanding work, and I really, really like The Chosen form. Nice job.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, as reader, I will give you final word.
Yeah, this was brilliantly executed in its form. Powerful lines. I like that within her words, she shows us a view of a world that is full of greed and hatred and judgment towards each other. And with the end shows us that we need to love and understand each other, to move past all that and to truly learn that not only do we have to love each other, but the earth as well. So amazing lines all the way through and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Okay, Laurent, we are ready for our next one.
Dex is our next reader. And Dex, I'm going to give you a poem by If Your Abs.
Awesome. Okay. Hang on by If Your Abs. Hang on to yourself. Give a fuck. Enough to learn. The past at last. This robe. The book of job where suffering is no worse than a man enslaved, a woman enclaved in a king's dominion with no opinion. It takes a busload of faith, the creed of Reed, lost in New York, spinning vinyl discs of Bjork, sipping heady wines of grapevine, soldier, an army of me, hung, bunches of earth, find what makes you tick. Lean into the darkling clouds of what makes you sick. Use purple ink and limb. The clouds kneel a cloth and sacred shrouds. Open up about what you've read. Yellow highlight things unsaid. Write poems down in pencil lead. Sabers of graphite light not spun from looms of spite. 'Cause this world will grind you. Canceline bones and grist and sun, light's shade of or cards of whist. And it's to you your rope of shrew to give a take, slake your thirst, but not burst on a surfeit of self. Hang on. End poem.
Great read, Dex. So, I just love this piece. Inspirational poem in the face of life suffering with reference to the book of Job. It reads almost like an invocation against life's darkness. I thought it was wonderful throughout, and those rhymes were so compelling. They really brought the message home. This, too, had a kind of slam poetry feel to it, you know, where you can see someone performing this live with, you know, just playing with the rhymes. And making the audience kind of move to its rhythm. Excellent lyrical poetry, very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, the strength to hang on, to slake your thirst, but not to burst on a surfeit of self, I think digs deeply into a gratification of self that needs easing. Otherwise, we are overcome. His message in his poem is profoundly hopeful, I thought, and a work that shines in broad daylight and blinds the dark.
Excellent comments. And Dex, as reader, I will give you final word.
Yeah, this was a really enjoyable piece to read. You know, it, like you said, it had that flow to it that felt like a piece that was ready to be, that was perfect to be read. And also it seemed like you said, it's to a David Bowie piece. So it had that lyrical quality to it for sure. But it also had that niche quality to it too. When you're talking about vinyl discs of Bjork and sipping heady wines of grapevine, it had that niche quality to it also, where it almost felt like it was talking to a certain audience, or if it wasn't talking to a certain audience, you had an appreciation for the audience that it was talking to. So it was a fantastic piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay. Okay, we are ready for our next one.
Richard, you're the next reader. And I put up a piece by Eric Daniel Herman for you.
Okay, great. Okay, so this is Eric Daniel Herman. It's called Transcend the Ouroboros, Escape the Matrix. Samadhi poetry strikes the invisible target. Labeled niche today as pearls with swine waste away, lines of tiger's eye, crystal sunset setting on a sleeping city until time catches up, rising with a martini and a cross in between candles, no middle way out the wasteland. At the summit of Ghee Hill, east of Leh in northern India, sits a monastery where a saffron-robed monk paints mandalas with granules of crushed colored stone, each grain placed to lay in the Baroque-shaped labyrinthine. Wielding a funnel-shaped chalk purr as their surgical paintbrush, several Buddhist artists spend several weeks dotting each microscopic, crushed and crystallized grain of pigment, gypsum, ochre, sandstone, charcoal, corn, pollen, bark, and charnel ground, orchestrated with atomic geometry, synchronistic order, layering hypnotic patterns from the center outwards, before suddenly muddying the chaotic dismantling of their Sistine Chapel-like temple adorning artwork, multiplicities in process philosophy, rooted rhizmatic ally on planes of imminence. Welcome to the slow cancellation of the future, a realism where mass psychoses and nostalgia fetishism grips the new youth, are stalked by the zombie dressed in mass-produced parasitical polyester, whispering abstract fiat verse as they cast a curse on Gaia and on those born across the tracks in the cracked red bricks. Lost pirates who would be at sea in the harbor of Fort Knox stepped onto paradise's shore, growing vulturous, prospector, immigrant roots, bringing alien seeds to pillage the land, feeding the flags, mechanic furnace, exchange for paved parking lots and double-digit lane highways. The prophetic Cree Indian chief and tribe sang and beat the drum of an axiological proverb, an ancient river and forest song ringing true now to our doom. All that glitters is as abstract a concept as the price of gold. Yesterday fades as the curtain call fell over autumn, soaking in the apricity my body slumped from hours spent in the chambered throes of Merake. Breathing in freshly brewed fika under a lucent apricot winter sun, noise fades into harmonious music as barking dogs, traffic, and crackling static constellate and I tessellate. Opening a moleskin journal, writing on recycled notebook pages, bucket lists and checklists, miss the view, cut to frame in front of you, endless thumb-driven scrolling, is the rope to hang you. Earthworms and beavers are the artisans to rebuild the mud and timber onyx tower of tomorrow, out of Babel's dust and ash, among a fossilized species plagued by a Jehovah complex built on a sandy soil podium, solely for placing first, playing schizophrenic games with linguistic semiotics. invisible shackles of the mind bind all born into the tribe of blood, flesh, and bone. Cut out the chains by guillotine to lines of reggae emancipation. Escape the realm ruled by the matrix throne. Beyond, transcend beyond the Ouroboros. End of poem. And Laurent, if we can start with you, what'd you think?
You can start with me. You may have to end with me. This is a pretty remarkable piece. Right off the bat, it seems to me to be very spiritual. And yet, I'm going to start with the title, Transcend the Ouroboros, Escape the Matrix. Now, Escape the Matrix seems to offer the idea that there's an entire world just out of sight, just beyond us. And when he says transcend the Ouroboros, of course, is that great worm that swallowed its own tail. So, you know, it's a big circle, kind of a closed loop, and I think that's the matrix that we need to try and escape. There's a lot of spirituality in this poem. We have the saffron-robed monks, the Buddhist artists, and that was fascinating. We spent several weeks dotting each microscopic crust and crystallized grain of pigment, gypsum, ochre, sandstone, charcoal, corn pollen, bark, and charnel ground, orchestrated with atomic geometric synchronistic order. And then what do? They muddle the lines in a chaotic dismantling of their Sistine Chapel-like temple adorning artwork. I don't know why they do that, but it is very symbolic of something I think rather important. Probably my favorite stanza in this is the welcome to the slow cancellation of the future, a realism where mass psychosis and nostalgia fetishism grips the new youth. And that's a different drummer entirely. Some of the worlds we live in are not very pleasant in a way. The way it's ended is really well done. Cut the chains by guillotine, the lines of reggae emancipation, escape the realm ruled by the matrix throne, transcend beyond the Ouroboros. A brilliant piece, there is no doubt. One that requires a little more attention than perhaps I can give it at this point. This is a late entry. I didn't have time to read it ahead of time. Very well done.
Well, you know, for not having an advanced read, you had a comprehensive and I thought well-reasoned read of the poem. And yeah, I too thought this was a wondrous spiritual song of transcendence in the heart of life's impermanent beating drum. I love the inclusion of the sand mandala, a great mix of art, spirituality, creation, and then eventually destruction. They destroy the sand mandala. All adherence to the truth of now, of this present moment. And just a really brilliant write by Eric. And let's do one more comment. Pam, what'd you think?
Well, first of all, did you hear our united sighs of relief as you asked Lauren to comment first? No, this is absolutely brilliant. As always, Eric Daniel Herman has thought-provoking imagery and metaphors. The fact that this is the second poem tonight to make reference to the Ouroboros or the serpent swallowing its own tail makes me think I either need to go back and look closer at the prompts or I need to know more about this author. I found that very intriguing. I love the imagery where saffron-robed monks paint mandalas with granules of crushed color stone, each grain placed in the Baroque-shaped labyrinth. And welcome to the slow cancellation of the future, a realism where mass psychosis and nostalgia fetishism grips the new youth. We are stalked by the zombie dressed in mass-produced parasitical polyester. And this takes, I think, a deep, raw, and honest look at the way we are so caught up in the future, so caught up in the advances of society, that we don't take time to see the transcendence of the moment, where we can focus on what we're doing in the moment and the art that can be created from silence and stillness. So just a brilliant, thought-provoking write, and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. Okay, Laurent, where would you like to go next?
Well, I'm going to read Thunder Sleeps by Diane D. But before I do that, let me simply say that, Pam, the book you want is The Worm Ouroboros by E.R. Edison, which, incidentally, is a third epic fantasy to compare with Tolkien's Lord of the Rings and Gorman and Deke's Gormenghast trilogy. And I do recommend it to you. All right.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
No problem. It's another book I enjoyed. This is called Thunder Sleeps by Diane D. Thunder sleeps, arched and flout, run about, to the roar complete, as rains pour, gray and gray, last to gasp, to let go, of the rock, stones, where alone the blue pine, as it seems, makes sun rays, turn west and squint dance, like red ants off the war, guns ablaze in French haze, the farm crows can caw, and oak trees spin their straw on acres of dirt earth, which flits white like speck dust in sunlight. Thunder sleeps. And
excellent read there, Laurent. And if we could start comments off with Dexter, what'd you think?
Yeah, this is a great write. And, you know, I'm torn on this, on the meaning of it, whether it is soldiers that are out in the battlefield, like even almost in the trenches, you know what I mean, and they're experiencing this thunder. And, you know, in the trench haze, you know, it is very straightforward there. But it also almost feels like an ode to the fact that a lot of times that in our it's in the country setting that calling comes to our soldiers, you know, in the Alabama, in the Alaska, you know, or, I mean, Alaska, Arkansas. It's a lot of times in that country setting where the calling of the thunder rolling to really feel that duty to fulfill it to their country happens. And so I'm torn on which way it happens, but I thought that this was a fantastic piece either way, Diane.
Excellent comment there, Dex. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is amazing. I mean, first of all, the way she used, like, short lines to create a long line of poetry that is almost like soldiers lined up. It's like the physicality of the poem is a representation of the words. Amazing imagery and metaphors. I saw within this the violent voice of war as a collective. And the idea of the silence that speaks volumes. I especially like to let go of the rock that casts stones, where alone the blue tine, as it seems, makes sun rays turn west. You know, amazing lines and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too really liked how that minimalistic Japanese style was skillfully woven with these kind of like slam-like alliterations. I know I've said that on a couple of the poets poems tonight, but I think it was the prompt itself that kind of led the poets down that slam-like path. And here, I thought it was especially poignant because the topic of war, guns blazing, trench haze, lends itself to that tight phrasing and short, punchy lines. So I thought it was extremely well suited to the subject matter that was given. Very nice job. And Laurent, as a reader, I'll give you a final word.
I'm sorry. I'll tell you what, I'd love to, but we have just enough time to get one more in. Can we do that, please?
I see that. Yeah, we've only got 9 minutes. Go ahead. Give us our next poem.
All right. This is a poem for Pam by Hats.
All right. It would be a pleasure to read Hats. All right. Here we go. Come, see my madness and feel comfortable or run away by Hats. Jeans, T-shirts, skirts and dresses, sandals and sneakers, books, the rarest unread ones, so many things on which only dust settles, the dust to which I'll turn myself. By then, I yearn to see the dawning in his eyes when reading my notes scribbled with a gray pencil on a sail napkin as the heat slowly expands behind the chest when saying my name, like a ghost unseen at first, but deeply embedded in the bones, like a perpetrator touching my cells without rubber gloves. Only the moonbeams convict his fingerprints. He is engraved deeply, as if I were illegally drunk. Desire holds my breath. At the most inopportune moments, he ignites in my head like an explosive, which loosens my armor. Then I put on a Mona Lisa smile, and at the bottom of my eyes, glittering mysteries sink, speechless, with a smile on my mouth, I hang on for my chance. End poem.
Great read there, Pam. I thought this was a truly beautiful poem, aesthetically pleasing, that explores the mystery of self as reflected in a lover's eye. Especially liked when I put on a Mona Lisa smile and at the bottom of my eyes, glittering mysteries sink. Excellent piece. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to say that we have just enough time to get Weaver in. I would hate to miss one of Weaver's poems. So maybe we could take this one more comment from Dexter, maybe, and then we'll move right to Weaver.
Good, quick comment.
I'm sorry, I thought that this was a fantastic piece. I took it a little differently. I almost thought that this was somebody inappropriately maneuvering on this person, and I thought that this was a fantastic piece, though. It was perfect for the genre. I thought that it would left it very open. So very well done, Hans.
Cool. Very cool insight. I didn't catch that. Thanks, Dex. Okay, Laurent, let's get Weaver's poem up.
Yeah, it's a short piece. We'll have just enough to put it in.
Perfect.
All right, and Sam, I'm going to ask you to read again. How's that?
Absolutely. I'll be happy to. All right. Light within shadows cast, by Weaver of Dreams. I pace through the halls and rooms of Gormenghast, becoming one with candle flames and glass lanterns. The walls writhed and pulsated, weaving a complex tangled glow of the purest pigments, both vivid and subtle. As I traversed echoing empty rooms, what would my mind perceive, pleasure or pain, paradise or perdition? Embrace all beauty as if on the wings of a seraphim, a plummet to the depths in the clutches of dark demons. Let no one's mind influence or confuse you. Hold fast to conviction. Listen
to the screams of the weak-willed and poem.
Excellent read again there, Pam. Yeah, I paced through the halls and rooms of Gormenghast, becoming one with candle flames and glass lanterns. It drew me in from these first lines and held me all the way to the close. Very compelling brevity. Amazing how much atmosphere Weaver crafts into 93 words. Nicely done. And Pam, as reader, what'd you think?
Powerful imagery and metaphors, amazing lines. Like you said, a very atmospheric piece. I really love how she creates within these dark walls the idea of exploring and finding answers for yourself and understanding the importance of standing up for your convictions rather than going into the eternal personal hell of the weak-willed who conformed. Great write and very well done.
Excellent comment. Okay, so we have come to the close of yet another show. And I wanted to, first of all, thank everyone that joined us on the message board. It was a very active board. And I appreciate all the comments on there, Mam Yaw, and I know Jenny was on there, and Diane. And then the people that joined us on the air, Dexter, Pam, Fill My Eyes joined us for the beginning of the show. Always a treat. And special thanks goes out to my co-host, Laurent. Great topic, great writer to showcase. And it was a wonderful show. The poets really brought the work. And as always, that's where the final thanks comes. It's to the poets who write for us every 2 weeks and make this show the success that it is. Without you guys, there is no show. So we appreciate your efforts. We've still got a little bit of time, so I want to turn it over to you, Pam. Tell us what's coming up in a half hour.
Yes. Up next, we have some carryovers, but our main focus is poetry inspired by the photography of Eve Arnold, who was known for doing portrait photography of celebrities such as Marilyn Monroe. But she was really also known for her photography that took a bold and honest look at social injustice during the 1930s, 40s, and 50s particularly. So I'm sure most people know her work, but those that don't, I highly recommend checking it out as it's very moving. And, of course, for the show, poetry readers and commenters are always welcome.
Awesome. Thanks so much there, Pam. Sounds like a fun show. And then always, Friday is open mic with Fill My Eyes with Poetry, 10 p.m. Eastern. So join us tomorrow night for that. And with that, I believe we have come to the end of another two-hour show. Thanks so much. Thanks, Laurent. Great show. Great idea for a show.
Thank you, my friend. Good job.
All right. See you next two weeks from now. That's it.